you.
Good morning, honourable members. Noel Tanda, we're forming a quorum for the meeting.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you very much.
Honourable members, this is the continuation of the meetings of yesterday and day before. We're on our last day of our oral hearings. May you flag the agenda Thank you. Thank you very much. All members, I am in the greatest Kukuni district, Marble Hall area, Hobokwane. There were severe storms last night, early hours of the morning. So yeah, lots of people didn't sleep well, and we wish them luck in their recovery of whatever they lost during the storms. You are all welcome. We are continuing with our engagement with the Bella Bill. Is there any mover for adoption of this agenda? I'm setting up as I'm talking to you. Any mover for adoption of the agenda and the program?
Morning, Chair.
Yes.
Honorable Nkosi, Chair, greetings to
yourself,
all members present in the Zoom meeting. I move for the adoption of the agenda, Chair. Yes, thank you.
Fire, thank you. Any second?
Don't get any seconds, Chair.
Yes, Honorable Dongene, thank you very much. Like I said, we welcome those who are new to the program, our guests. I'm trying to get a list of the thank you very much. Welcoming today Cape Home educators represented by Mariji Uckerman, and then we have the Selborne Primary School SGB represented by Mr. Ryan Bishop. We have the Lyre School Liefeld SGB represented by Mr. JJ Skippers. We have Lyre School General Albert's Primary, represented by Mr. Martin Pretorius. And we have the Northcliff High School SGB, represented by Mr. Bradley Lee. And we have Independent Micro Schools Education First Research Group, represented by Mayor Janine Teixeira. And then we have the Learning Gut Remedial Teaching, represented by Mayor Catherine Kenyon. We have Learn Free, represented by Ndate Christopher Cordeiro. And we have Homeschool Association South Africa, HSSA, represented by Mayor Rebecca Liebenberg. And we have Let's Do It Together for Education, represented by Mr. Naresh Patel. You are all welcome, and also welcoming those who are with us from the first day. They were in our meeting yesterday. They are still in this hearing again today. We thank you and appreciate your commitment to listening to others, and also, you know, hearing what other people are suggesting in terms of the bill. This bill was the bill we're dealing with is referred to as the Bella Bill. It's actually the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill. That is B2B of 2022, which was introduced to the Select Committee on Education, Technology, Sports, Arts and Culture on the 8th of November 2024. The department took the committee through the clause by clause proposed amendments within the bill and the clauses which were amended after the National Assembly public participation process. It is with this background that the NCOP decided to conduct its own public participation to get input from all stakeholders on the amended version of the Bella Bill. Since this bill is a Section 76 bill, it was referred to the provincial legislatures to also embark on a public participation process in the provinces, whereby members will eventually return with negotiating mandates from their respective provinces. However, due to the high public interest in this bill, this select committee on the NCOP has also called for the written submissions from the public to provide its input on the bill. Upon receiving the written submissions, we felt that it is also important to invite stakeholders who requested oral submissions in order to listen to their concerns and drive a robust dialogue on this highly, interesting bill. We would therefore like to thank all the organizations to availing themselves to contribute to the shaping of the future of South African basic education. We hope that this oral hearing will be fruitful and provide a meaningful engagement to yourselves and the committee. Thank you very much. Let me just go straight ahead and invite a representative from Cape Home Educators, Me Mariki.
Sorry, Chair. There's one more organization, Section 27, represented by Mr. Michelle Peter Bridge, and one individual, Miss Tanya Fennis.
Yeah, those two also will be included in the letter, and they are welcome. I just omitted their names because I think I'm using the old the original paper. Thank you very much. You are all welcome. And can we just give the platform to Cape Home Educators? Ma'am, you've got 30 minutes to make your presentation or talk to us. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning. I just want to share my screen. Can you see my screen?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, we do.
Thank you. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Committee Members, and all present. My name is Mariki Ikerman, and I'm the Chairperson for Cape Home Educators. Cape Home Educators, I'm sorry, just want to go to the next slide. There's the agenda. Sorry, I forgot to cite it. Okay. Cape Home Educators was established in 1996 and is a voluntary association that strives to promote home education. The association endeavours to obtain the recognition of society and the protection of the law for the right of children to receive education within the family and for the obligation and the concomitant right of the parents to be able to educate their children in every respect. The association furthermore endeavours to obtain for children the maximum freedom to be educated within the family and community in accordance with the best interests of each child and in line with their own culture and religious beliefs. The association recognizes that the state has a constitutional obligation towards the child to provide education in cases where the parents are unable or unwilling to educate their children themselves. The association recognises that the parents have a right to dedicate the task of education to persons of their own choice. Cape Town Educators, therefore, rejects the ballable on the following grounds. There was inadequate engagement. I am grateful that we have this opportunity to consider whether the DBE had engaged with home educators on the ballable. In the PCBE meeting on the 17th of August 2023, Mr. Ndlebe claimed that there had been consultations between home educators and the DBE on the ballable. If these meetings were indeed consultations on the bill, one would expect that the ballable would have been on the agenda of these meetings, that copies of the ballable would have been distributed at these meetings, and that inputs on the bill would have been requested. There is a link to the recording of this meeting at the bottom of the slide. I will provide Mr. Ndlebe's statement first and then respond to it. He said that the first consultation meeting on the review process regarding the policy on home education was held on the 9th and the 10th of October 2014. There were meetings with the home education sector and the DBE in 2014 and 15. These meetings focused on compiling a discussion document that would form the basis for the future policy and law. Although two versions of a draft discussion document were distributed during these meetings, a final discussion document was never completed or made publicly available for comment as promised by the minister. During these meetings, no mention was made that a task team was already drafting the ballable. The home education sector was caught by complete surprise when the ballable was published for public comment by the DBE in 2017. Therefore, these meetings cannot be viewed as consultation on the ballable. The outcome of these meetings was a draft discussion document produced by the DBE's own consultant, Dr. Trevor Coombe, a retired Deputy Director General of the Department of Education. Dr. Coombe produced an excellent document. It provided requirements that had to be created as a condition of a successful consultative relationship. It included the fundamental need for research with a mutually agreed methodology, as well as laying out a process to avoid exactly the situation we have now, with all homeschoolers rejecting the ballable. A working group was established. It held meetings from 2015 until the policy of home education was promulgated in November 2018. There were several fundamental problems with this working group. Dr. Coombe's discussion document was ignored. The need for research identified by Dr. Coombe was ignored. The DBE doesn't even know how many homeschoolers there are. It appears that the DBE had a predetermined outcome in mind. The DBE's fundamental lack of understanding of home education and failure to implement research led to the inability to find common ground. It might be worth mentioning that there is currently a national task team working on the regulations of home education, and that some of the home educators on that group are very dissatisfied. Some feel they are being co-opted to create the impression of engagement because they do not see the incorporation of their contributions, apparently because the DBE appears to have a predetermined outcome in mind. They also find that the DBE fundamentally lacks an understanding of home education and that they are unable to find common ground. Please take note that there was another working group that worked on the ballable. Home educators did not form part of that group. Mr. Ndlebe said on 28 February 2020, the Department of Basic Education hosted a roundtable on the implementation of a policy on home education. In February 2020, a roundtable was held and many representatives from the home education sector were invited. However, this roundtable was about the implementation of the home education policy and not the ballable or the policy itself. This is articulated in the DBE report on the roundtable that states, the roundtable was geared towards strengthening collaboration with the home education community to ensure proper implementation of a policy on home education as set out in the National Education Policy and the South African School Act of 96. Furthermore, home education associations like GoFam Educators had to write and ask to be allowed to attend this roundtable. In August 2020, follow-up meetings were held about the implementation of the home education policy, the establishment of JLCs and the National Task Team for Regulations. Since then, a few JLC and NTT meetings were held. However, the objective of the JLCs were generally focused on the implementation of policy. No copies of the ballable were distributed at the JLCs and no input was requested in the bill. The meetings of the NTT had a similar focus, as articulated in the appointment letters that stated, one of the recommendations of the roundtable was the establishment of a task team whose responsibility would be to develop regulations for the policy on home education. The roundtable referred to above proposed the establishment of a task team to develop regulations. The task team was established on 22 June 2022. The task team had 5 meetings since its establishment. However, this is regulation. The ballable is taken for granted, not the discussion of the ballable. Then he said on the 22nd of September 2020, the Department of Basic Education held a meeting with the South African National Homeschooling Association to discuss issues regarding the implementation of a policy on home education. Again, that was on policy. He said on the 4th of August 2020, the Department of Basic Education held a meeting with the Liberty and Learning Coalition to discuss issues regarding the implementation of a policy on home education. Again, please note that was on policy. The Pestalozzi Trust continued to engage with African Rutman after the publication of the ballable in 2017. At various occasions, the Pestalozzi Trust requested Africa Rutman to arrange a meeting between the task team responsible for the ballable and the trust, but such an engagement never realized, even though it was promised by Atsika Drosman. In summary, there were indeed a few meetings between the DBE and home educators, and sometimes these meetings were experienced in a positive light. However, the agendas of these meetings were never about the ballable. During none of these meetings was a copy of the ballable distributed and inputs requested on the ballable. These meetings can therefore not be viewed as consultation on the ballable. Mr. Ndlebe, however, does not mention the meetings that did take place on the ballable. One, there was a meeting with the Pestalozzi Trust in October 2017, primarily to discuss the logistics of handling the large number of homeschool submissions that crashed the relevant official's laptop and how the trust could assist to collate responses. Two, in January 2020, the minister met with the trust. The trust was asked to submit comments, which the trust did, backed by a legal opinion. Some changes were made to the bill as a result, and I will elaborate on this meeting. 3. On 9 January 2021, DBE officials met with the trust to discuss research and the research needs for a comprehensive SAIA. The Pestalozzi Trust provided a list of research needs keyed to the SAIA. The DBE did not respond again. With regards to the meeting between the Pestalozzi Trust and the Minister, there was only one meeting between the Pestalozzi Trust and the Minister on 28 January 2020, where the Trust was given a copy of a ballable and was asked to comment. The Trust raised concerns on the following points. 1. The SA Schools Act is inappropriate to regulate home education. This matter was discussed during the meeting. The proposal to regulate home education outside of SASA was not challenged, but it was felt that the ballable had progressed too far in order to consider. Two, that education officials must grant permission to choose home education causes tension with other laws. The trust submission articulated this as follows. We therefore aver that where the parent makes the decision to home educate, that this decision is not subject to a process of approval by the state, and especially not a process in which an official of its state interposes him or herself between the parent and the child and decides how the child's fundamental right to education ought to be realized and the parent's fundamental responsibility to guiding, directing, and securing the child's education is exercised. 3. The impact of the home education provisions in the Balabol cannot be considered without a fully costed socio-economic impact assessment. 4. It is inappropriate to enforce assessments developed for CAPS and the National Curriculum Statement on a sector that uses a diversity of curriculums. 5. The requirement to register for every phase unfairly discriminates against home learners. This concern was substantiated with a legal opinion that was provided. 6. The home visits provision in the Balabol may constitute a breach of the privacy provision in the Constitution. This concern was also substantiated with a legal opinion. The penalty clause, number 7, the penalty clause imposing a potential custodial sentence of a fine and or up to 12 months imprisonment for failure to register for home education is not in the best interest of the children concerned. This concern was also substantiated with a legal opinion. The outcome of this meeting was that the requirement to register for every phase in point 5 above was changed to a once-off registration and then notification for the subsequent phases. Since this meeting was about the Balabol and did result in changes, it was certainly a meaningful engagement. However, this was only a single engagement with one organization. This cannot be viewed as wide consultation with the entire sector. I hope that we can at least agree that there was inadequate engagement. The home education sector experienced that the DBE had a preordained outcome in mind that was largely to implement the Western Cape draft policy on a national level. The Balabol will entrench an education system that fails to realize many learners' rights to basic education. It seeks to entrench the current binary education system that only caters to education at school or home, thus ignoring and suppressing innovation in education that would realize the right to a basic education for those that do not fit into the current system, thereby discriminating against and depriving learners of access to basic education. Pretending that the majority of learners are well catered for by the current binary education system not only ignores the school placement crisis, but also the fact that the poll report indicated that a shocking 81% of learners at grade 4 cannot read for meaning. The Balabol places unconstitutional and unfair restrictions on home education, such as compliance to registration and curriculum requirements. In Clause 1, Definition, basic education includes grade 0 to grade 12 as evidenced in the National Curriculum Statement. The proposed definition in the Balabol excludes any curriculum of a standard not inferior to the National Curriculum Statement, but that excludes or diverges significantly from the National Curriculum Statement. CHE recommendation is to redefine as basic education means pre-tertiary education and may include education in public schools, independent education, including home education, and other forms of education recognized in legislature. Alternatively, redefine as school education and create a definition in regulations. Basic public school education means grade 0 to grade 12 as evidenced in the National Curriculum Statement. Whereas the Constitution requires registration for home education with the state, Clause 35 requires obtaining permission from the HOD to be registered for home education. We strongly oppose the imposition of restrictions on children's rights to education in terms of Section 29(3) of the Constitution without considering the relevant factors in Section 36. The Constitution stipulates only one relevant limitation on the right to education, namely, that the quality of education provided must not fall below the standards of comparable public educational institutions. However, Clause 1 and 35 impose additional limitations on the right to education for home learners. A. It prohibits the utilization of educational programs that meet or exceed the standards of the national curriculum, but do not cover skills and content comparable with the national curriculum. B. It prohibits the provision of education overseen by the learner's parents if conducted in a more suitable environment outside the learner's home. C. It prohibits the utilization of appropriate tutorial or educational support for all curriculum areas even if delivered by a certified teacher. CHE recommends that the committee replace Clause 35 with a proposal from the Pestalozzi Trust. The Bail Bill will impose an inappropriately severe penalty clause and expose home educators to double jeopardy. It intends to maintain the current binary education system by using an inappropriately severe penalty clause to intimidate parents and independent educators into compliance, and furthermore, home educators are exposed to double jeopardy. Clause 2 of the Bail Bill proposes that the penalty for not complying with the requirements of the SA Schools Act is increased from 6 months to 1 year. This penalty also applies to failing to register for home education. The Pestalozzi Trust objected repeatedly to an inappropriate penalty for mere administrative negligence. In a submission to the Minister in January 2020, the Pestalozzi Trust provided a legal opinion that stated, failure to comply with procedural requirements of Section 51, for example, should not carry a potential custodial sentence of 12 months. That is unreasonable and could never be in the interest of a child, yet that is what the bill, as currently worded, provides. In a feedback presentation by the DBE to the PCBE on the 20th of October 2020, the DBE responded by making the statement, the penalty clause is not specifically targeted at non-registration for home education. This clause is directed at non-attendance at a school. It has been inserted as a deterrent for those parents who fail to send or prevent a child from receiving education. The penalty clause was increased in the bill to provide for not exceeding 12 months, as the existing penalty clause did not serve as a deterrent. However, despite the objections and the admission that the objection is valid, no changes were made to Clause 2, and the Bail Bill submitted to Parliament in 2022 contains the same penalty. As part of its written submission to the Bail Bill in 2022, the Pestalozzi Trust provided a more expanded legal opinion, as well as a criminological opinion on this inappropriate penalty clause. In the oral submissions to the PCBE in November 2022, several organisations also objected to the penalty clause, including Christian View, Equal Education, Section 27, Malahambi Seventh Day Adventist Church, Learn Free, and the Legal Resource Centre. After the deliberation of the PCBE, stakeholders were given the opportunity to provide inputs for the A-list. CAPM educators made a proposal to change the penalty for failing to send a child to school to a 2,000 rand fine, in line with the current Eastern Cape School Education Act. Christian View also made a similar proposal. Despite all these well-reasoned objections, Clause 2 still contains a 1 year imprisonment penalty. This raises the question why the inappropriate penalty clause is retained, while the DBE admits that the penalty clause is not appropriate. A possible answer to this question can be found in the socio-economic impact assessment and can be viewed as the position of the DBE. According to the DBE, homeschooling parents and organisations are dissatisfied with the requirement that they must register their children for home education and the provision of assessment reports by competent assessors, and it is expected that this dissatisfaction will lead to disputes. The DBE proposes to resolve these disputes through mediation and or institute legal action, litigation in a public court. The sale therefore seems to indicate that the DBE knows that home educators will resist the implementation of the Bail Bill, and it plans to use litigation to coerce compliance with the bill against the will of home educators. Without a stiff penalty, litigation will be very difficult. If that is indeed a correct conclusion from the available facts, then it makes sense that the DBE wants to keep an inappropriate penalty to be used to intimidate parents. Another possible answer relates to Clause 33, which increases the penalty of operating an unregistered independent school to 1 year. This seems to indicate that the offence of homeschooling your own children without registration is viewed as similar to operating a school in which you educate other people's children without registration. What effect will Clause 2 have on HIVS schools? children who do not fit into traditional schools, children who thrive with alternative modalities and approaches, learners for whom cottage schools are the only alternative because they don't find school placements. Will micro school operators face a 12-month sentence and a criminal record? The double jeopardy predicament. An underlying problem with home education is that it can be viewed as part of independent schools as well as part of parental care. Whereas schooling is regulated by the SA Schools Act, parental care is governed by the Children's Act. Disputes with the DBE with regards to registration requirements exposes parents to persecution from the Department of Social Development, with social workers threatening to remove children from parental care because they are not attending school. Excuse me. If home education is regulated under the independent education, when why is the DSD involved when a home educator fails to be registered? Home educators are exposed to double jeopardy because they can be persecuted by both the DBE and the DSD for the same offence. What might happen if a parent is unable to register for home education due to religious reasons regarding compliance with the contents and skills in the National Curriculum Statement? This vulnerability to prosecution was illustrated in the Doe case. The Doe family of KwaZulu-Natal were finally reunited on the 14th December 2015 after the children had been removed by social workers 8 months previously for not attending school. Their three eldest children, of whom the youngest was only 3 years old, were permanently returned to the care of their parents by the Children's Court, which set aside all the previous orders which had caused the children and their parents great heartache. The children had been removed from the family in April 2015. The only reasons given to the court were that the children were not attending schools and that their parents were religiously indoctrinating the children with their religious beliefs. But the original order initiated what Advocate Avril Potgieter described as the most bizarre case he had ever encountered. Advocate Potgieter was the senior of three legal representatives engaged by the Pestalozzi Trust to represent the family. The other two were Mrs. Paula Bernard and Advocate Dion Shaw, who acted as junior to Advocate Potgieter. The court also refused to accept the recommendation of a social worker and other interested parties, but the court ordered the social worker to supervise the family's homeschooling for a year. The presiding officer on the 14th of December 2015 was the third one since the case had started in April. He commented that there is nothing wrong when parents bring up their children in their own beliefs and that such an upbringing makes the children better people. He also made it very clear that in his view, these children should never have been before the court in the first place. The matter should have been dealt with by other means. These remarks constitute a serious rebuke to the social workers who had brought the matter to court and had recommended that the children be removed from their parents. I would like to make the case for a new education dispensation. The South African Schools Act regulates schools and a limited form of home education. The education landscape has significantly changed over the last decades. Apart from home education, there's also been an exponential growth of several emerging education modalities. Modalities such as cottage schools, online schools, tutor centers, collaborative home education, and co-work spaces. Home education and these new modalities are interrelated and interdependent. Regulatory reform of one of these modalities cannot be done in isolation. The school system is still the largest, but it is deteriorating. The emerging education modalities are growing fast. There is no regulatory certainty on any of the other modalities despite the existence and evidence of their achievements to serve many learners in accessing a basic education. Section 29(3) of the Constitution states that everyone has the right to establish and maintain at their own expense independent educational institutions that A, do not discriminate on the basis of race, B, are registered with the state, and C, maintain standards that are not inferior to standards comparable at public educational institutions. The Constitution gives the right to establish educational institutions. The National Education Policy Act limits this right to schools only. According to Section 1 of the NEPA, education institution means any school contemplated in the South African Schools Act, 1996. This definition makes it illegal to operate educational institutions that operate significantly different from traditional schools. To realize that right, the right to establish institutions that are very much unlike schools must be acknowledged. Therefore, there is a strong case for a new educational dispensation that will reflect the existing educational landscape, not currently provided for in law, that will support the growth of an enabling educational environment. I think we all agree that South Africa is facing an enormous and urgent educational crisis. Together, we must understand the complexity of our education system from all angles to overcome the challenges. If we embrace all opportunities and enable the private sector to get involved to help shift the system that currently subjects millions of children to an unequal education system, we will be able to collaborate and collectively bring about the systemic change our education sector desperately requires to provide greater access to basic education. The valuable outlaws innovation and effectively criminalize it. We need a new educational dispensation that will reflect and enable new educational modalities to be established, registered, and supported. This will immediately help to solve the school placement crisis, cater to learners with diverse educational needs, broaden opportunities for early childhood development, and enable and protect edupreneurs to establish educational institutions. An appropriate regulatory framework requires that the law used to regulate something must be designed for the thing it regulates. According to its preamble, the SASA was designed to regulate schools. However, home education and emerging education modalities are fundamentally different from school education. Therefore, home education is regulated by a law designed not for home education. It's like regulating bicycle transport by means of the Trains Act. We need to have a broader societal level conversation about what it means to be educated now and whether what we are doing is fit for purpose in the 21st century. Sorry, I meant 1-4. It would be an incredible loss if a DBE did not see the opportunity and value of progression and agility that the development of online schooling, home education and emerging education modalities such as cottage and micro schools and learning centers bring. If a department does not take the time and the effort to understand the possibilities clearly, they will perpetuate old problems and failures into new opportunities. Unless the DBE seeks ways to enable and partner with the private sector in finding solutions to accommodate learners, we will continue to discriminate against and disadvantage learners in obtaining a basic education. Now is the time and the opportunity to seek educational solutions to educational problems. Through thorough research into the practice and reality of home education and emerging education modalities, and to reflect that into legislation and regulation that will be in the best interest of a child in obtaining a basic education by drafting regulations that mirror and will enable the practical reality of independent educational institutions instead of providing legislative solutions in service of bureaucratic administrative systems. Home educators have asked the Pestalozzi Trust to develop a proposal for the NCOP phase that protects their rights, but is also constitutionally sound so that it can't be easily dismissed. The Pestalozzi Trust made a presentation yesterday, and I will move on to the next slide. Cape Town educators thus request that the NCOP will consider and adapt the definitions that will affect home education.
If you watch your time also, ma'am.
I will just quickly finish. Sorry. CHE thus requests that the NCOP will consider and adapt the definitions that will affect home education to become fit for purpose, and furthermore to delete clause 35 from the ballable and accept a proposal from the Pestalozzi Trust in the interim whilst developing a new regulatory framework. The formulation of the Pestalozzi Trust proposal is designed to protect the rights and freedoms of the home education sector and to allow the continued growth of the sector. Furthermore, Siachi hopes that the committee will consider legislation that will make education compulsory, not schooling, as compulsory schooling in South Africa fails 81% of school-going grade 4s who cannot even read for meaning. This is indicative that drastic regulatory reform is urgently needed. Thank you for considering CHE's submission.
Thank you very much, Mayor Ukema. Honourable members, that's the input from Cape Home educators. Are there points of clarity that members would like to ask from the presenter? There's none. Thank you very much for availing yourself and making time to come and address us on this important matter of basic education, our children. Thank you very much. I'll call upon the second speaker, will be Selvon Primary School SGB. They are represented by Ntatelian Bishop. Over to you, Rev. Bishop.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. With your permission, I'm just going to share my screen.
You're welcome.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Select Committee. It is an absolute privilege to be here today, and I thank you for this opportunity. I must admit that I am daunted at the prospect of speaking here today for two reasons. The first reason is that I'm speaking to members of Parliament. The second reason is that when I looked at the list of those chosen to present, they all represented influential groups within the sphere of education. I am, however, representing a small school in East London, and I see myself as an everyday person. But perhaps that is the point. An opportunity to present the honourable members of the Select Committee for the people, by the people, as the expression goes. Today, I am representing Selborne Primary SGB. We are a small monastic boys' school in East London, in the beautiful Eastern Cape. We are proudly South African school, and I am presenting to you our thoughts on the Bella Bill. Let me start by saying that it is definitely time to amend the Schools Act. This is long overdue. As an SGB, there are many parts of the amendments that we are in favour of, and I take this opportunity to highlight to the committee just three. Firstly, I highlight Clause 2, which amends Section 3 of the Act with reference to the making of Grade R compulsory. As a side note, we are concerned about the funding of this, but in essence, we support the idea. Does the department have the funds to provide facilities, resources, and human resources for making these grades compulsory is an important question to have. Should the department be unable to make these facilities available with resources, then it would find parents guilty of Section 3 of the Act, which criminalizes non-attendance at school. However, in essence, as an SGB, we believe that making this grade compulsory is critical for formalizing education at this grade. This will have a massive impact on education in our country as a whole. We are also in favor of Clause 22, which amends Section 28 with regards to the national and uniform standards of the SGB elections. This will again remove any uncertainty and certainly set the standard for all SGBs around the country. We are also in favour of Clause 36, which amends Section 59 of South African Schools Act with reference to the provision of false information. From our SGB point of view, this will greatly assist schools when parents provide false information in order to gain admissions into our school. However, there are several clauses that we are not comfortable with. These clauses include Clause 4 regarding the amendment of Section 5 with reference to admissions policy, Clause 5 regarding the amendment of Section 6 with reference to the language policy of the school, Clause 14 regarding the amendment of Section 21 with reference to central procurement, and Clauses 34 and 36 regarding the amendment of Section 43 and 48 with reference to the submission of quarterly financial reports to the Department of Education. The Selborne Primary SGB objects to these clauses on the basis of two principles, namely democracy and capacity. In our country, we have one of the best democracies in the world. The theory of role players having a say in the running of their country is something to be proud of. This has influenced all spheres of life, including education. Schools have, since the South African Schools Act, allowed parents as role players to have a voice in the governance of their schools. By centralizing power that was once in the hands of the SGB, this would, in effect, prohibit their democratic rights to play a role in the education and choice of education for their children. South Africa continues to lead the world on democratic principles. In countries like the UK, where centralization has previously been policy, those departments in those countries have been moving towards a decentralization of power. In research, they often quote the South African experience. It makes no sense to us as to why we would now reduce what has clearly worked and has influenced many countries in the world to follow. In research published by Brian Caldwell in 2008, he suggested that decentralization played a large role in establishing successful schools. He said that schools that allowed more say from SGBs were effective and efficient. This was largely in line with international experience. On the screen, honorable members, I share 3 points from Brian Caldwell's research. Based on these comments alone, it should remain our democratic rights to formulate the policies for our school. The fact that we are required to submit this to the department for approval on its own is not problematic. However, the concept of an HOD in any province can sit in an office somewhere and make a decision on policies of a school is far removed from practicality. The HOD does not have the intimate understanding of the unique circumstances and needs of each school. This threatens to strip away the individual identity of schools like Selborne Primary, undermining the autonomy and local context that are crucial for effective educational governance. The biggest point for us as a school is that we are a juristic person, as established in the South African Schools Act in Section 15. As a school, over and above this fact, we each have our own identity and our own ethos. This is what attracts parents to join our school, to seek admission. Our parents form our community and they are a large part of who we are. By centralizing these decisions, we risk a single person or a position sitting somewhere far away making decisions about the school they know nothing about. This will ultimately destroy our school. At the SGB, we believe the proposed amendments to Section 5 of the Act are aimed at pressuring schools to admitting more learners into already capable schools, rather than the department constructing additional schools to accommodate the surplus of learners. The fact is that this would create overcrowding in our school. This would infringe upon the rights of the learners already in our school. The school and its parents have a right to choose what they want or deem as quality for their children. They choose our school because of the quality of education we offer, and by allowing the HOD to determine admissions, this will infringe upon their rights. Further to this, whilst there are norms and standards, the HOD does not necessarily know the information about each individual school. I know that it seems reasonable to assume that because schools complete paperwork with regards to information, that perhaps the HOD will know the situation in our schools. However, we submit the same information every year. To us, this indicates that the department does not take note of the information despite having it at hand. In my school, our classrooms are already full, and built in the 1960s, we cannot accommodate many more learners. Further to this, the school is in an urban center in the suburb. We are locked in, and there's no further room for physical growth. It would best serve our learners for admissions policies to remain under the jurisdiction of our SGB, as they know the school and its exact situation. This is the democratic right of the school and its parents. It is on similar principles that we object to the amendments to Clause 5 with regards to the language policy. Our parents have chosen our school for its language. Amending this policy will influence the school and affect the rights of our parents. The amendments again reference the fact that the HOD may make suggestions based on the broader community in the district in which the school is situated. As an English medium school, we do not presently have the facilities such as classrooms to add to any additional mediums of instruction. We do not have the human resources to add any additional mediums of instruction or to change our current medium, and neither do we have the resources to cope with these potential amendments. Presently, we are unable to fill our allocation of posts as provided for in the PPN. The ECDOE will allow you to only fill a post if someone leaves or retires from the department and your post is deemed critical. In our area, I can share that there are some schools that have been short of teachers for years. One school has had 6 vacancies and another has had 8. Personally, our SGB has been carrying 2 posts for a while now. Presently, the committee will be unaware that last year the ECDOE did not pay us the funds we were due with regards to our tranche payments. Schools in our district received only 66% of the allocated funds, with the department retaining 34%. To us, this proves that the department does not have the funds available to implement these changes, should it so wish. Based on this, the Selborne Primary SGB objects to these amendments of these clauses. It is our democratic right to govern the admissions policies as well as the language of teaching and learning in our schools. It is also our parents' constitutional right to make decisions in the best interests of their children. With regards to the amendments in clauses 34 and 36, we submit the following to the committee. Each and every term, we are required to submit numerous documents to the Department of Education. This is over and above the requirements in the Schools Act, such as an academic report and a school improvement plan. At the end of 2023, our school had to submit 15 different reports and or checklists to our local department. The amount of work that goes into each of these documents is not simple. This does not include the schedules that need to be prepared, academic meetings that need to take place to discuss flag learners, and plans put in place to assist these flag learners. Over and above this, we have the normal everyday tasks that each of our schools require us to perform to effectively and efficiently run our schools. Adding to this significantly would increase the burden on our schools and its resources. All schools, as governed by the South African Schools Act, submit an AFS, an audited financial statement, every year. This is a comprehensive report on the finances of each school. Asking schools to submit quarterly reports on its finances would significantly burden the school and place unnecessary pressure on staff and already strained financial resources. As an SGB, we also ask, why does the department need this additional information? Therefore, we do not endorse the proposal to amend sections 43 and 48 of the Schools Act. The final clause of the SGB objects to is that of central procurement. In the Eastern Cape, the procurement of textbooks has already been centralized, and we are not allowed to opt out. As an SGB, we object to this due to the fact that the department provides so little funds for a school like ours. The fact that we can possibly purchase one grade's worth of textbooks, and most of the time not even for the entire grade, means that the SGB is forced into supplementing textbook orders. This means that the parents, through school fees, are required to purchase additional textbooks. This creates an administrative nightmare for schools, having to complete two different procurement systems, one through the department and one through our own internal mechanisms. However, far more practical objections are that the department hasn't the capacity to deal with this. In 2021, our LTSM arrived only on the 28th of January for that year. This is long after schools had started. Fortunately, as a school, we have been permitted to opt out of stationary centralization to date, and we are grateful for this. Centralization of this process will remove our rights to procure our own stationery at the quality that our parents have come to expect. I can share with the committee that in our circuit, even the quintile 1, 2, and 3 schools complain about the quality of the product that they have received. They too have asked for the option of opting out, as the quality is simply not good enough. Quality is better than quantity. Further to that, asking a grade 1 learner to write his or her name on an LTSM distribution register as proof that he has received one ruler, one pencil, and a sharpener from the department is very difficult to comprehend. With regards to the second point of our presentation, this falls under the broad principle of capacity. Again, the second part references the same clauses that have been objected to already. The Department of Basic Education in the Eastern Cape does not have the capacity to deal with its everyday functions, let alone these potential additional responsibilities. I will provide the committee with numerous examples of where the department has failed to communicate with us timely, or even communicated at all. A week ago, I asked the department where I had to submit my concessions. The deadline was the 28th of February, and with a change to a CMC model in Eastern Cape, we were informed that everything had to go to our CMC. I contacted my CMC, Circuit Management Center, and asked if I had to submit the documents to them. To date, I have not yet had a response. This was critical documentation that would have gone to our boys' concessions to aid them with getting through tests and formal assessments at school. It would have assisted those very vulnerable boys with barriers to learning. However, no response. Fortunately, honorable members, I took it upon myself to draft the district office and still managed to submit timely. But the point is that the department has not yet responded to my query. At the same time, I queried the documentation required for termly submissions. Each term in the Eastern Cape, we submit an SGB functionality tool, as well as SMT building blocks. Each term, I complete the documents timely and submit, only to be told or informed that we have used the incorrect documents. The department is forever making subtle edits or changes to these documents and sending them out to us after they are due. Then we have to jump through numerous hoops to become compliant despite the late arrival of the incorrect documents. This term, in an effort to prevent needless work by completing the wrong documents, I again contacted my department to ask for the most recent versions of these documents so that I may complete them timely. time is running out as we have a week and a half left of school. I still have not had a response. On the 27th of February, 1853 at night, I received a memo from the department on via WhatsApp. It informed me that at least one member of our SGB had to be present at the training the next morning at 9 o'clock. To us, this again demonstrates that we do not have the capacity to handle our core day-to-day tasks, let alone any of these additional, bigger decisions. My SGB consists of attorneys, chartered accountants, heads of businesses, and quantity surveyors. They cannot attend important meetings at such late notice. On Monday, the 4th of March, at 8:18, I received a message about QMS meeting the next day. The WhatsApp read that this was a reminder about the meeting. However, to date, we still haven't received the first notification, so I'm not sure how we can get a reminder. Further to that, on that same day, I was an electoral officer at the crucial SGB elections that are currently happening around the country. Clearly, there was a clash with regards to these requirements, as I was required to be in two places at once. On the 27th of February, the department sent a WhatsApp at 6:20 in the morning informing schools that they needed to complete a document by 10 o'clock that day if they wanted to be considered to receive a grade R teacher. Never mind that this is 7 weeks after school has already started. To schools that were desperate, they would have had to drop everything to complete a document that again would be crucial for teaching and learning for those learners. My final point with regards to the capacity of my province has to do with our current SGB elections. The Honourable Minister of Education declared the SGB election dates to be in the month of March this year. This was gazetted as far back as the 5th of June in 2023. A memo from our Honourable NEC for Education was only signed on the 12th of February, providing the Eastern Cape with regulations for this election. The memo reached schools on the 15th of February 2024. In the regulations, it stated that schools had to submit their mode of elections to the HOD or their representative with 30 days' notice. Impossible to comply if you consider and look at these dates. This was expected or demanded in clause 11.2 of the regulations. Further to that, the HOD had 14 days to respond to the submissions. Clearly, this hasn't happened yet either. In both of these regulations, as well as the South African Schools Act, it refers to 14 days notice to parents of the upcoming elections. If you do the calculations, combined with the fact that schools close on the 20th of March, it's almost impossible to comply. Fortunately, my school was able to provide notice to parents irrespective of the late arrival of the regulations, as we were working off the gazette of the Honourable Minister. I must be honest, Honourable Members, that our district are trying their best, and they are full of good people trying to work hard for the benefit of our communities. However, there are plenty more examples like that every year, where we are given information at the last minute. Further to that, we often or seldom receive replies to our queries or emails. To us, as an SGB, this is indicative that the ECDO is not currently coping with their expectations adequately. We therefore question whether they would have the capacity to cope with these additional expectations as proposed in the amendment to the Bella Act, in the Bella Bill. One final suggestion that I have is that in the South African Schools Act, it allows for the HOD to remove the powers of an SGB that is underperforming. However, what if we do something completely different? What if we allow the status quo to remain, with the added privilege of allowing parents in the community to play a greater role in schools? What if we allow parents to play a greater role in enhancing the powers of the SGBs in high-performing schools? What if we allow them to have more of a say in how their schools are run? Honourable Members, I end with a famous African proverb that says, it takes a village to raise a child. On behalf of our SGB, our village, we appeal to the committee to, rather than remove the powers of the SGB, to provide a system to enhance the functioning of high-performing schools and school governing bodies. Honourable Members, it was a real privilege to address you on this platform today and for my school to play a small part in the legislative process. We sincerely thank you for your time and for the due consideration that you have given and will give to this amendment. We pray that democracy triumphs in the best interest of our school and of the learners that we serve. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ntate Rian Bosov. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for your upgrading yourself and for making this input as a contribution towards the reshaping our basic education sphere. We'll call upon So are there points of clarity that members would like to seek clarity seeking questions? And Dr. Boshoff won't be there when we discuss this. In the absence of any, I don't see any from my... let's thank you, Rep. Boshoff, for making time from your busy schedule to come and engage with us on this Parliament's platform. Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll invite the Life School Life Health SGB from Ntate JJ Skippers. Skippers.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just share my screen now.
Yeah.
There we go. Good afternoon, esteemed members of the committee. My name is Joshua Skippers, an admitted attorney and partner at the Toy Smuts and Partners Attorneys. Additionally, I have the honour of serving as the chairperson on the school governing body of Laerskool Laagveld, a multiracial parallel medium primary school with roughly 1,200 learners. With a personal connection deeply rooted in the institution, as all four of my children have attended and are still attending Laerskool Laagveld since 2014. I have been privileged to contribute to its development for over a decade, serving on the SGB for the past 7 years. Today, I am before you representing the collective voice of our school community and governing body as we aim to provide a thorough oral submission regarding the proposed amendments to the South African Schools Act 1996 as outlined in the ballot. Our engagement stems from a profound dedication to the welfare and educational advancement of our learners. We are grateful for the opportunity to contribute to this important discourse and offer insights into the potential implications of the proposed changes and whether it will contribute to the quality of education in our school and the province of Mpumalanga. In our written submissions, we have articulated several key concerns regarding the proposed amendments to the South African Schools Act 1996, as presented in the ballot. Our submissions highlight objections to specific clauses, including Clause 4 pertaining to the admission policy of public schools, Clause 5 addressing language policy, Clause 16 concerning the powers of the school governing bodies in procurement, and Clause 34 mandating quarterly financial reporting. Additionally, we express our support for certain proposed changes outlined in the ballot. Throughout this presentation, we will delve into each of these areas, providing detailed insights into the potential implications for Laerskool Laagveld and similar institutions, and advocating for amendments that prioritize the welfare and educational development of our learners. The primary objective of this presentation is to critically evaluate the proposed amendments to the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill and their potential impact on the quality of education at Laerskool Laagveld and within the province of Mpumalanga. We aim to achieve the objective by highlighting specific concerns raised in our written submissions, supported by evidence from the grassroots level of our school. Additionally, we seek to propose alternative solutions where necessary and advocate for changes that prioritize the welfare and educational development of our learners. In our educational landscape, the concerns raised in Clause 4 of the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill directly impact all 3,775 public schools within the province of Mpumalanga, including those in the Mbombela circuit. Like Laerskool Laagveld, these schools operate within a collaborative framework facilitated by circuit admissions committees to ensure fair placement of learners. The proposed amendments of Clause 4 pose a significant threat to this collaborative approach by granting the provincial HOD final authority over admissions. This centralized decision-making process undermines the effectiveness of circuit admissions committees, which have been instrumental in ensuring equitable access to education for all learners within the community. Moreover, the bureaucratic hurdles introduced by Clause 4 could impede the timely and efficient placement of learners across the 3,775 public schools in Mpumalanga. This administrative burden not only affects admissions, but also impacts critical aspects of school management, such as staff appointments, infrastructure development, and learners' discipline. By relinquishing admission authority to the HOD, Clause 4 compromises the autonomy of governing bodies across all schools in Mpumalanga, not just Lars Bolaarveld. It disrupts the delicate balance of power envisaged by the Constitution, impacting the collaborative partnership between governing bodies, the HOD and the Minister. In light of these concerns, it is crucial for all schools within the Mpumalanga province to oppose Clause 4 of the ballot and advocate for its complete removal. Maintaining local control over admission policies is essential for safeguarding the quality of education and fostering a sense of community ownership within all 3,775 public schools in the province. At Lars Bolaarveld and within the Mbela circuit, the admissions process is not merely administrative, but imbued with complex challenges that directly impact the quality and integrity of our educational system. Our school receives 200 to 250 applications annually for admissions to grade 1, while our capacity allows for only 160 learners to enroll. In adherence to the constitutional judgment in FETSAS versus Gauteng Department of Education, our school has established a fair admission criterion based on a determined feeding area, which serves as the basis for determining admissions. Additionally, the information provided by parents is verified accordingly. One significant issue we face annually is the submission of fraudulent information by applicants seeking admission. This problem has become so pervasive that our school principal personally conducts unannounced house visits to verify addresses provided by applicants. In the past year alone, our principal has undertaken over 120 such visits, aiming to ensure that applicants indeed reside within the feeder area of the school. Shockingly, many applicants are found to have supplied false information and documentation, revealing a systematic issue that undermines the integrity of the admission process. The consequences of such fraudulent practices extend beyond administrative inconvenience. Admissions decisions become fraught with racial tensions, as transparent and diligent handling of applications is essential to combat accusations of bias or favoritism. We have encountered situations where even departmental officials within the Education Department, including one working in the highest office of the Mpumalanga Department of Education, to which the bill aims to give more control, have supplied false information to multiple schools in a bid to secure admission for the official's child, as seen on the slideshow, showing parts of an official report sent to the department. This flagrant abuse of the system not only undermines the credibility of the admissions process, but also erodes trust in educational institutions and their leadership. In the face of these challenges, it is imperative that admissions policies remain under the jurisdiction of governing bodies, familiar with the local context and intricacies of their respective communities. Granting final admissions authority to the provincial head, as proposed by Clause 4, would only exacerbate these issues. The provincial department, already burdened with numerous responsibilities, cannot be expected to conduct address verifications for each school's feeder area effectively. This lack of oversight would only perpetuate the prevalence of fraudulent practices and compromise the integrity of the admissions process. In light of these realities, Lars Bolaarveld staunchly opposes Clause 4 of the Bella, as it fails to address the fundamental challenges faced at the grassroots level of our educational system. We urge the committee to consider the practical implications of this clause and uphold the autonomy of governing bodies in admissions decisions to ensure the integrity and fairness of our educational system. Another pressing issue facing Lars Bolaarveld and primary schools in Mbela is the chronic delay in the construction projects promised by educational authorities. In August 2019, the Education MEC Bonakele Majuba announced plans to eradicate asbestos classrooms and provide additional classrooms to primary schools in Mbombela, including a project at Lars Bolaarveld consisting of the removal of 5 asbestos classrooms and the construction of an additional 8 classrooms. However, despite assurances of completion by the end of 2021, this construction project remains unfinished, with an estimated completion date pushed to July 2024. The implications of this delay are severe. School governing body made the difficult decision to accommodate additional learners when construction began in 2020, utilizing temporary facilities such as mobile classrooms, the school hall, LAPA, garages, and the staff room. This temporary solution allowed the school to continue admitting learners while awaiting the completion of the new classrooms. However, this situation has led to significant disruptions in the learner environment. Learners who were initially placed in temporary facilities in 2020 will now have spent 4 years in makeshift classrooms before moving to their intended learning spaces. Moreover, once the construction project is finally completed, there will be no additional classrooms available to accommodate new learners, as all available spaces have already been repurposed for teaching. These construction delays not only hinder the school's ability to provide adequate learning spaces, but also strain resources and compromise the quality of education. Granting final admission authority to the provincial HOD under Clause 4 exacerbate these challenges by further centralizing decision-making and potentially overlooking the urgent needs of schools experiencing infrastructure deficits. In light of these circumstances, Lars Boerlaafeld adamantly opposes Clause 4 of the BALOP. We urge the committee to consider the practical implications of construction delays and uphold the autonomy of governing bodies in admissions decisions to ensure equitable access to quality education for all learners. Adding to the challenges faced by Lars Boerlaafeld in other schools in Mbombela is the failure of educational authorities to fulfill promises of new school constructions, exacerbating the issue of overcrowding. Lars Boerlaafeld was the last public school to be built in town of Mbombela 42 years ago. New schools were mentioned in 4 budget speeches in the past, one of which was in 2019 when the Education MEC announced plans for the construction of a primary and high school in Mbombela, slated for completion in 2020-2021 and 2021-2022 financial years, respectively. However, to date, no progress has been made on these promised schools. Not a single piece of land has been touched, nor has a foundation been laid for their construction. A High Court, the University of Mpumalanga, as well as a parliamentarian village were, however, built in the city of Mbombela. Mbombela has also seen a big redeployment of the SANDF members back into town. All of these developments with not a single new school to accommodate the influx of families. Furthermore, during a recent meeting between the Acting Deputy Director of Education and the Lars Boerlaafeld School Governing Body, it was revealed that officials from the department were not even aware of a feasibility report conducted by the Department of Human Settlements. This report indicated that land allocation for a high school was 100% completed by the City of Mbombela, awaiting only confirmation of funding from relevant institutes. The provincial department's lack of awareness of ongoing projects, despite an EMIS number already being allocated to the school, underscores the bureaucratic inefficiencies plaguing the education system. It is deeply concerning that the same provincial department that announces new schools in the capital city of the province is unable to effectively manage ongoing projects or even be aware of critical developments. This raises serious doubts about the department's capacity to handle additional responsibilities as proposed under Clause 4 of the BALOP. Granting final admission authority to the provincial HOD would only further centralize decision-making power, potentially perpetuating the cycle of bureaucratic inefficiency and failed promises. In light of these revelations, Lars Boerlaafeld firmly opposes Clause 4 of the BALOP. We urge the committee to consider the department's track record of unfulfilled promises and bureaucratic shortcomings when deliberating on the proposed amendments. Retaining local control over admission policies is essential to ensure that overcrowded schools are not further burdened, becoming unable to provide quality education, and that promises of new school constructions are fulfilled as budgeted for rather than perpetually deferred. School's governing body of Laerskool Laagveld took proactive measures to assess the school's capacity in relation to norm standards and building regulations, contracting the services of a professional occupational health and safety company. A comprehensive report was compiled and submitted to the district and provincial education departments. Despite repeated attempts by the SGB to engage with the department regarding the report's findings, as seen on the slide, no response has been forthcoming. Instead, the school only receives instructions to admit more learners beyond its capacity. The report's findings highlight critical considerations that must be addressed before determining the school's capacity. Notably, projections indicate that the school will struggle to accommodate the projected influx of new learners in the coming years, with grade 1 enrollments consistently surpassing grade 7 departures annually. This imbalance in grade enrollments poses significant challenges to the school's capacity planning efforts. Moreover, the safety risk assessment identified several areas of concern, particularly regarding traffic management, facility utilization, playground capacity, and classroom availability. Of particular concern are the risks associated with traffic congestion during peak hours, as well as the wear and tear on buildings resulting from overcrowding. The report underscores that the school was not originally designed to accommodate the current learner population, falling significantly short of building regulations and national minimum norms and standards for school infrastructure. According to the Occupational Health and Safety Assessment, the school's maximum capacity, accounting for growth projection and specialized subject requirements, is determined to be 700 learners. However, with the current enrollment already surpassing this figure, and no immediate plans to expand infrastructure, the report strongly cautions against further enrollment. Expanding on the existing infrastructure would encroach upon already overcrowded playgrounds and recreational spaces, posing further challenges to learner safety and well-being. Considering the risks associated with overpopulation, the SGB asserts that it would be in the best interest of both the school and its learners to refrain from enrolling additional learners. In light of these findings and recommendations, the SGB urges the committee to consider the practical implications of overpopulation and infrastructure deficits when deliberating on Clause 4 of the ELO. Retaining local control over admission policies is essential to ensure the safety, well-being, and educational outcomes of all learners. Despite the clear capacity constraints outlined in the report and the repeated attempts by the SGB to engage with the department, including sending letters regarding the findings, the promises of new schools have yet to materialize. This failure to address infrastructure deficits directly impacts the school's ability to accommodate additional learners. In the absence of concrete solutions from the department, the provincial HOD continues to issue instructions, as seen on the slide, to circuit managers and school principals to accommodate unplaced learners, disregarding the capacity limitations outlined in the report, placing undue pressure on school principals to manage a situation that exceeds the school's capacity. What is particularly concerning is the lack of engagement and consultation with the school governing bodies on this matter. Despite the explicit mandate under the South African Schools Act to oversee admissions, the unilateral actions by the HOD not only undermine the authority of the SGB, but also exacerbate the challenges faced by schools in managing overcrowding and ensuring the safety and well-being of learners. This continued disregard for the capacity limitations and the autonomy of SGBs in admission decisions highlights a fundamental flaw in the proposed amendments under Clause 4 of the ELO. Granting final admission authority to the HOD further centralizes decision-making power, perpetuating a cycle of bureaucratic inefficiency and undermining the collaborative governance framework envisioned by the South African Schools Act. In light of these ongoing challenges and the department's failure to address infrastructure deficits, the SGB reaffirms its opposition to Clause 4 of the ELO. Local control over admission policies must be preserved to ensure that decisions align with the best interests of the school community and the safety and well-being of learners remain paramount. Clause 5 of the ELO introduces significant concerns regarding language policies at Laerskool Laagveld and in other schools in Mpumalanga. Laerskool Laagveld, as a parallel medium school offering teaching in both Afrikaans and English, faces unique challenges in maintaining its language policy under the proposed amendments. This potential requirement for provincial head of department approval of language policies threatened to disrupt the carefully crafted language instruction framework established by the school governing body. This interference could compromise the school's ability to provide quality education tailored to the linguistic needs of its diverse learner body. Additionally, the proposed centralization of language policy decisions undermines the autonomy of individual schools and neglect the linguistic and cultural diversity that characterizes the educational landscape of Mpumalanga. Lars Bolaarveld serves as a prime example illustrating the challenges posed by Clause 5 of the BALA, particularly concerning language instruction and infrastructure limitations. As one of the three primary schools in Mpumalanga offering teaching in both Afrikaans and English, Lars Bolaarveld plays a vital role in providing bilingual education to its learners. As the only Afrikaans and English primary school situated in the western part of the capital city, the school serves a diverse learner population, reflecting the linguistic and cultural richness of the region. However, the proposed amendments to language policy threaten to undermine the school's ability to maintain its parallel medium instruction model. With limited infrastructure and resources, accommodating the proposed changes would strain the school's capacity and compromise the quality of education. This real-world scenario highlights the urgent need for a nuanced approach to language policy that respects the autonomy of the individual schools and acknowledges the linguistic diversity inherent in South African education. Clause 16 of the BALA raises significant concerns regarding the autonomy of governing bodies, such as Lars Bolaarveld. Under this clause, there is a potential loss of authority for school governing bodies in procurement decisions, particularly concerning the acquisition of learner and teaching support materials. As can be seen in the slide, parents together with the schools already disagreed with the education department on the curriculum needs and what was provided for by the department. Granting the provincial head of department centralized power over procurement undermines the SGB's ability to make informed decisions tailored to the unique needs of the school community. This shift in authority not only disregard the collaborative governance structure outlined in the South African Schools Act, but also threatens to disrupt the efficient allocation of resources at the school level. By centralizing procurement decisions, Clause 16 may result in bureaucratic inefficiencies and hinder the effective management of school resources, ultimately compromising the quality of education provided by institutions like Lars Bolaarveld. Historically, the SGB has been responsible for procurement processes, ensuring that learner and teaching support materials are acquired efficiently and in line with the school's education objectives. However, under the proposed amendments, the provincial HOD would gain centralized authority over procurement decisions, bypassing the SGB's input and expertise. This scenario poses significant challenges for Lars Bolaarveld, where the SGB's intimate knowledge of the school's needs and priorities informs procurement strategy. Without SGB involvement, there is a risk of misalignment between the procurement decision and the school's educational goals, potentially leading to inefficiencies and resource mismanagement. By highlighting this example, it becomes evident that Clause 16 undermines the autonomy of governing bodies and threatens to disrupt the effective management of resources at schools like Lars Bolaarveld. Lars Bolaarveld contends that the potential risk and challenges associated with Clause 16 necessitate a re-evaluation of this provision. The proposed subsection should be deleted unless it incorporates a provision allowing public schools the voluntary option to opt in to this method of acquiring LTSM. Lars Bolaarveld expresses strong reservations regarding Clause 34 of the BALA, which proposes amendments to Section 43 of the South African Schools Act, mandating governing bodies to submit quarterly reports on income and expenses. The proposed amendment mandates governing bodies to submit detailed quarterly reports on income and expenses with a tight timeframe, adding to the administrative burden already borne by schools. While the aim may be to enhance financial transparency, the practical implications of this clause could severely strain the financial and administrative capacity of schools. Given the existing constraints on resources and staffing, particularly concerning administrative personnel, the additional workload posed by quarterly reporting threatens to overwhelm governing bodies like Laerskool-Laagveld. According to the post-provisioning norm, Laerskool-Laagveld qualifies for 3 admin clerk posts, but due to a moratorium that was introduced more than a decade ago, only 1 admin clerk is being remunerated by the department. As such, there is a pressing need to reconsider the inclusion of Clause 3-4. Rather have schools that did not submit audited financial statements for the previous 2 years or received qualified audits for 2 years in a row to comply with this clause. We support. Laerskool-Laagveld unequivocally supports Clause 2A, which aims to make Grade R education compulsory. Laerskool-Laagveld expresses full support for Clause 19, which empowers the Minister to promulgate uniform and national measures governing the election of members of governing bodies. And Laerskool-Laagveld supports Clause 38, which proposes the criminalisation of providing false information to schools by parents. As per the case explained earlier, this clause will assist in finalising admissions promptly. In conclusion, the presentation has highlighted significant concerns regarding the Basic Education Laws Amendment and its potential implications for schools like Laerskool-Laagveld. We have firmly articulated objections to specific clauses, emphasising the threat they pose to the quality of education, administrative autonomy and overall well-being of learners. The proposed amendments, if implemented without due consideration of the practical challenges faced by schools, could exacerbate existing issues and hinder the effective delivery of education. It is imperative that the concerns raised by Laerskool-Laagveld and other stakeholders are taken seriously and that amendments are made to ensure that the interests of South African children remain paramount. We extend our sincere gratitude to the committee for the opportunity to present our concerns on the ballot. We acknowledge the importance of your role in shaping the future of education in South Africa, and we trust that you will carefully consider the points raised today. It is our fervent hope that decisions will be made in the best interest. Will be made in the best interest of the South African child, prioritizing their educational needs above all else. And I want to reiterate the African proverb, it takes a village to raise a child. Let us work together as a collective village to ensure the success and well-being of every South African child. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, thank you very much, that is Skipper. All members, that's the presentation from Selborn Primary School, SGB. Laerskool-Laagveld, yeah. So then that is Skipper side. I marked the wrong one. Let me do it like this. Yeah. Are there questions of clarification questions to the present on the platform from the members? I don't see any hand from the system here. And today, Skippers, thank you very much for making time to talk to us and talk to South Africans on this platform about what you believe is the right thing to do.
Thank you,
Going forward. Thank you very much. We'll call upon our next speaker will be Laerskool General Albert Primary. They are represented by Ntate Martin Pretorius. Rep Pretorius, the floor is yours. Sir.
My apologies, Chair. I can't seem to find Mr. Pretorius on the platform. Can I suggest that we move to the next presenter in the meantime?
The next presenter this time will be Northcliffe High School. Is it all right?
Yes, Chair.
All right. Northcliffe High School SGB, they are represented by Ntate Bradley Lee. Ntate Lee, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you to the Honourable members of the committee for allowing us to make these oral presentations today. I really do appreciate, and I hope everybody is having a good Friday and looking forward to a good weekend ahead of everybody today. Thank you, Honourable Chair. If I may proceed, may I have permission to proceed with my presentation?
Yes, you are. You may continue.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. I would like to first off start off by confirming that my name is Bradley Lee. I'm the chairperson of the governing body for Northcliffe High School, and I'm going to be making oral submissions today regarding the proposed amendments to the South African Schools Act in terms of the Basic Education Law Amendment Bill. Written submissions were submitted to the chairperson of the committee in January 2024, and I'll just be adding some flesh to the bones of the submissions that have already been made. I'd like to first of all start off with the proposed changes that we are in support of, that we believe will enhance education. We would specifically like to refer to Clause 2A, and this is regarding the requirement of compulsory education in Grade R. We as the governing body of the school, we do believe that it is to the benefit of education in the country and to our learners that Grade R is made compulsory. However, I'd just like to echo the sentiments of the previous representatives that have made submissions to the committee regarding the costs and the flow on of the costs that are involved in order to move forward with allowing a Grade R class. Obviously, the costing may not have a direct impact on Northcliffe High School based on the fact that we are a high school and that Grade R would be applicable to junior schools. However, the knock-on effect is obviously with the costs. We believe that the department is already severely hampered by the costs and obviously the budgets that they have. And we believe that including a further standard would further deplete the budgetary requirements of the department. And we believe that specific guidelines should be put in place in order to ensure that the budgetary requirements are met and that the knock-on effect to other schools is not substantial enough that it degrades the integrity of the education that's currently being presented to learners. However, I wish to reiterate that we do support the inclusion of Grade R as a compulsory grade. We would just like the department to take recommendations regarding the budgetary requirements for the Grade R project. Regarding Clause 19, and this is the proposed amendment regarding uniform and national measures governing the election of members of governing bodies, the benefit regarding the effectual governing election of members, we are in support. And obviously, we believe that this would further facilitate the actual collaboration between governing bodies and the department, as is defined in terms of the Constitution. Regarding Clause 38, and specifically regarding criminalizing the act of providing false information, we 100% support this proposed amendment. Our school has had numerous incidents of false information that has been presented, and unfortunately it adds a huge burden in order for the school to ascertain what is fraudulent and what is not. We believe that criminalizing the act of providing false information should assist in dissuading individuals from providing false information, and it will thereby alleviate the effect of the schools having to independently investigate and corroborate information that's been provided to them for the admission process. So I'd like to reiterate that the governing body of Northcote High School would like to propose and support the inclusions of Clause 2A and Clause 19 and Clause 38. I'd like to now move on to the provisions that we have presented objections to as per our written objections that were previously submitted. And I'd like to start with Clause 4 regarding the admission policies of public schools. We do not support these proposed amendments. In reference to our previous comments, we strongly reiterate that we have serious reservations about the previous proposed amendments, as well as the current proposed amendments. The power to determine a school's admission policy vests in its governing body in terms of Section 5 of the Schools Act. Clause 4D of the bill proposes amending Section 5(5) of the SASA by introducing a provision which seeks to limit the governing body's power to determine the school's admission policy. The first substantive change is that the proposed Section 5(5)(a) of the Schools Act states that the provincial head of department, after consultation with the governing body, has the final authority to admit learners to a public school. The referral to final authority, we believe, conflicts with the scheme of the Schools Act and applicable court judgments, which envision a cooperative partnership between the governing body, the HOD, and the minister. The notion of a cooperative partnership between the minister, the provincial department and the school governing bodies as envisaged and prescribed in Section 41H of the Constitution is undermined by giving the HOD this final authority. And we have referenced Section 41H of the Constitution. I have no doubt that based on the stature of the members of the committee, they are well versed with the Constitution and specifically Section 41H. However, reference is specifically made in our written submissions. We believe that the proposal is firstly problematic for the same reasons stated above, and the requirement of the HOD's approval of the school's admission policy conflicts with the scheme of the Schools Act, which envisages a cooperative partnership between the governing body and the HOD. Secondly, provinces do not have the capacity to deal with ordinary day-to-day submissions and correspondence. With just under 24,000 public schools and with provinces struggling to deliver on existing legislative obligations, we have difficulty in seeing how they would be able to respond to all the submitted policies. At Northcliffe High School, the school's admission process involves volumes of applications. Northcliffe High processes approximately 1,949 applications for grade 8 alone. Of the 1,949 applications, there are availability for 280 placements in the school. In 2023, the Northcliffe High School was engaged in litigation and we were co-respondents with the Gauteng Department of Education. A learner had brought a matter to the courts based on the fact that they were not admitted into the school. And this was based on the fact that they did not fall within the criteria or the selection criteria for the school. On opposition, Northcliffe High School and the GDE were successful in opposing that litigation, and the court decided that the learner did not have grounds for admission into Northcliffe High. This was in 2023. The back end of that, in 2024, a learner presented admission to the school, and unfortunately in that application there was certain false information that was supporting the application. The individual or the learner was not in the feeder zone, had no siblings and further or no siblings in the school, and further the parents were not working within the area of the or the feeder area for the school. So unfortunately the application was not successful, and this was communicated to the learner and the learner's family. Family thereafter escalated the position to the office of the HOD or of the GDE, and it later, through discussion and consultation, it was the decision of the GDE that the learner should be placed in the school. Now, obviously, the contrasting issue that we have is on one year in 2023, we supported by the Gauteng Department of Education in opposing litigation regarding the admissions policy and criteria. The very next year, where a learner specifically does not comply with the admission policy and processes and further submits false and fraudulent information is still forced upon the school to be placed by the Gauteng Department of Education. And this is one of the concerns that we have. And I'd like to draw an analogy of the person who attends the HOD's office or to the department, and the person who has the biggest tantrum or throws the most amount of vigor towards their objection is generally the person that at the end gets placed. And this is the concern that we have with the HOD's office having an absolute discretion regarding placement. The concern is simply that the amendment may result in a floodgate of learners that are unhappy with not being placed despite not complying with admission criteria. They'd be escalating the matters to the HOD's office that cannot accommodate the volume of disputes. The consultation process that will be required in terms of the amendment will place further an undue strain on the office of the HOD and the school. Further, on the instance of the HOD, schools would have to place learners despite their failure to comply with the admission criteria. The examples that I have just alluded to are proof thereof. As recently as last year, a letter was sent to some schools instructing them to increase their intake considerably. Possible court action was threatened by the schools, and a letter was later sent retracting the instruction to increase their intake. We believe that this situation may have been different if the HOD had sole discretion regarding the placements in the school. Believe that specific guidelines should be drawn in order to promote the involvement of the school, and strict adherence to placement criteria will enable the effective management of admissions to the schools and assist the placement of learners. These guidelines would effectively promote the spirit of Section 41(8) of the Constitution of South Africa. Firstly, guidelines should be defined before promulgation of the amendments in order to prevent the proverbial floodgate of referrals to the office of the HOD. Two, the guidelines would prevent unnecessary strain on the HOD's office and would place more emphasis on policy rather than on discretion. Thirdly, the guidelines would promote the involvement of the school and the principles as founded in the Constitution. And lastly, the guidelines would assist in effectively regulating and therefore effectively managing the placement of learners at what are already overcrowded schools. The effect of the discretion may, without specific policy and guideline adherence, result in the overcrowding of already overcrowded schools based on the ineffective management of referrals purely based on the volume thereof. Policy and guidelines effectively reduce and remove the effect of discretion. We reiterate that there is a great need for a set of objective criteria to guide the determination of schools' capacity, taking into account the minimum uniform norms and the standards for public schools. And we therefore reject Clause 4 of the Bill and advocate for its complete removal. The next clause that I'd like to discuss is Clause 16, and this is regarding the school's governing body's powers concerning procurement. Clause 16 seeks to empower the HOD to centrally procure identified learning and teaching support material for public schools after consultation with the governing body and based on efficient, effective and economic utilization of public funds or uniform norms and standards, notwithstanding this function may have already been allocated to the governing body under Section 21 of the Schools Act and without Section 22 applying. This proposed amendment is problematic, firstly, because it appears to provide a means for summarily circumventing the allocation of functions between the governing bodies and HODs for the purpose of procurement. This amendment seeks to enable the HOD to withdraw this function from the SGB without due process. Secondly, the implications of this amendment will be that the department will centrally procure LTSM for schools. Given certain provincial departments' incapability to deliver books to schools, there is a concern that the provincial departments will not have the capacity to deliver quality material on time. In practice, this amendment can be very problematic, and the proposed subsection we believe should be deleted. I'd like to reference the findings and recommendations as outlined in the Government Technical Advisory Centre's Lessons from Spending Reviews on Learning and Teaching Support Material, which was published in 2022. the following was put forward. Although, number one, although there is a national sector LTSM plan, this is not enough. There is a need for a clear national LTSM policy that provinces can adapt to their specific circumstances through the development of provincial LTSM policies. Thus, the recommendation is that the National Department of Basic Education should develop a national LTSM policy that guides the planning, procurement, distribution, and delivery of LTSM. The national policy should ensure that the LTSM program is implemented efficiently, delivers value for money, and that the provinces should customize the LTSM policy to their specific circumstances. Number two, several provinces have experienced vast challenges in identifying their LTSM needs accurately. Part of the problem is limited and unreliable data on textbook stock needed to determine LTSM needs across the provinces. Thus, the recommendation of the report is that the provinces should improve their processes and systems for identifying textbook needs. This includes strengthening the capturing and management of textbook inventory data. Provincial heads' offices and National Department of Basic Education must also improve their monitoring capabilities. Procurement models differ across provinces and lead to varying levels of efficiencies and cost savings. Thus, the recommendation is that the Department of Basic Education must explore the possibility of developing a transversal contact with publishers for textbooks listed in the National Book Catalogue. Fourthly, there are questions about the integrity of LSRM data produced by SASAMS, BAS, and Logis. The lack of complete and reliable data makes data-driven planning and procurement extremely difficult. The recommendation is therefore that the Department of Basic Education and provinces must develop a strategy to improve the quality, reliability, and completeness of data on LTSM. Fifthly, provinces follow vastly different strategies for digitization and ELTSM. Currently, there is no coordination on the development of ELTSM, and the risk is that provinces might be duplicating efforts in terms of the contact development, which comes at a cost to the fiscus. Thus, the recommendation is that the Department of Basic Education and provinces develop costed ELTSM plans. Lastly, the introduction of new textbooks require considerable additional investment by provinces over the 22 financial year. Unclear whether provinces have planned for this new development and it included in their projections. Thus, the recommendation is that the Department of Education and provinces must prepare detailed costed implementation plan. Now, I wouldn't like to take the members through the numerous examples of service delivery failures by the department. We had 2018, the Department of Basic Education had an issue with delivery of Braille textbooks, which only occurred in November of 2018 after a High Court order. 2022, the Eastern Cape delivery issue with regards to textbooks that were only delivered to individuals in the Eastern Cape, belated in up until March. And in 2023 in Northwest, there was a further delivery issue, and there was actually a statement made by the CASAS chairperson, Bongani Ndlovu, where he confirms that it's shameful in a democratic country of South Africa for learners not to receive their stationery. We submit that allowing the governing bodies of schools to effectively manage the procurement of LSTM and further services and ensuring the accountability may assist in what seems to be a prevalent issue of service delivery issues based on ineffective supply management. The final clause is clause 34 that we will be opposing, and this is regarding the providing of quarterly reports on all income. There was a research paper published by Simon Ditling Sebedi of the University of Pretoria, and in that it was determined that thematic data analysis was used to analyze collected data. All the participants in the program demonstrated limited knowledge and understanding of the processes and procedures of auditing financial records, including an inability to interpret audited financial reports. However, the participants revealed the benefits of audited financial reports, such as trust from parents in how school fees are managed. Furthermore, the audited financial reports enable schools to seek and apply for additional funding from businesses and other organizations to be allocated funds. study recommends that the Department of Education should provide stakeholders in financial management with adequate support and training in auditing processes and procedures in the interpretation of financial auditing reports. Evident from the study is that schools have low level of knowledge regarding processes and procedures of auditing financial records. This further burden on schools' management structures to now submit reports on a quarterly basis may severely and adversely impair the ability of the school to properly account. We submit that until such time as the Department of Education provides schools with financial management officers with adequate support and training in auditing processes and procedures and interpretation of financial auditing reports, requiring the submission of quarterly reports would just burden schools' financial management systems, and the amendments would give effect to the requirement for further training and education. The quarterly reports in themselves are not an issue, except it could be very time-consuming drawing them up and ineffective for schools that do not have the knowledge as we have previously discussed. The department does not have the capacity to go through each and every report, therefore we don't see the need for it. As management of the school accounts to the governing body every month, the financials are prepared for by auditors and sent to the department once a year. The governing body are held responsible for these statements. The parent attends an AGM once a year where they can inspect both financial statements and the budget. The current situation allows for absolute accountability without any party feeling overburdened. Honourable Chair, these are the submissions that we have made. As I've said, it is an elaboration on the written submissions that were already submitted in January of 2024. I wish to thank the members, the honourable members of the committee and yourself, Honourable Chair, for allowing me this opportunity to present our submissions to you. And if there are any questions, obviously, I would be welcome to field those.
Our chair?
Yeah, thank you. My phone had frozen. Yeah, that's the end of the presentation. Reverend Lily, are they points of clarity that members would like to ask to the presenter? I'll monitor that from the screen here. I don't see any hand. So, Lateli, thank you. Thank you very much for putting away time on the side so that you can come and talk to us and give your view and contribution towards the basic education laws amendment bill. Thank you very much. And we'll call the Independent Micro Schools Education First Research Group. They are represented by Mayor Yanin Teixeira, and they will be followed by Section 27. Later, over to you, Mayor Yanin Teixeira.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair. Thank you. There's been a change. I will be doing the presentation for Education First. My name is Jordan Willett. Good morning, Chair, members of the Select Committee, and everybody here today. I'm Jordan Willett, representing the Education First Research Group. Today, I'm honored to address you on a matter of great significance, the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill. I'm going to share my screen so that you can follow along with me. All right, fantastic. So who is the Education First Research Group? Education First Research Group is a recently formed coalition of researchers, educators, owners of educational institutions, learners, and concerned citizens who have as a foundational principle that the right to education is a fundamental human right, and that that right makes it possible to enjoy other human rights. And as such, education must be put first. We work closely with researchers, education, law and policy associations, and the non-governmental sector, both locally and internationally. We'd like to specifically highlight the role of micro schools and how they fill the gap in the South African educational landscape and the changes that we hope to see in the Bellable to accommodate and empower micro schools. Micro schools can be defined as an educational institution with 135 or fewer learners that operates outside traditional legal frameworks. These schools often cater to students with special educational needs or those who have not thrived in conventional settings, offering multi-grade environments and tailored learning approaches. What makes micro schools unique when compared to traditional mainstream schooling? Many micro schools are multi-grade environments where we see children of different ages and different academic levels sharing a space. Learning is tailored to the individual needs of the learner. And this can be done using alternative curricula or approaches, and even when the national curriculum statement or CAPS is used, they are adapted to meet the learner's needs. The national senior certificate is not exclusively used, and alternative school leaving qualifications are offered. The pupil to educator ratio is low, in a number of cases 10 to 1 or even smaller. A high percentage of these schools cater to learners with special education needs, but what we see is that even when learners do not have formally diagnosed special needs, a high percentage of learners have not thrived in the conventional school setting and have experienced barriers to learning when using NSC or CAPS compliant curricula and related modalities. A number of learners who have struggled with mental health, bullying, and falling behind because of sickness, etc., are choosing to join independent micro schools to better suit this situation. Mastery-based learning is practiced in some environments, especially where learners have struggled with high-stakes summative assessments, such as end-of-year exams. Independent micro schools are often located nearby registered public and independent schools and work with them cooperating to accept and enroll learners whose needs cannot be accommodated in the larger environment of the public and independent schools. And the most obvious characteristics of these schools is that they are small, physical limited space, a small staff, and this makes it difficult to meet large school-based criteria when registering. The development and evolution of micro schools. The emergence of independent micro schools in South Africa was influenced by a misinterpretation on the policy of the registration of learners for home education. This misinterpretation led to the belief that an independent form of education, alternative to public or independent schools, was permissible. These micro schools evolved from homeschooling, with parents seeking alternative education options for their children and group socializing dynamics. The digital revolution, particularly high school broadband, accelerated the growth of the subsector, especially during and after the COVID-19 pandemic. Anecdotal evidence suggests that the independent micro schools grew very rapidly during and after COVID-19, as parents sought smaller, safer environments for their children or more personalized learning approaches to assist their children in catching up following the reopening of schools. A number of students then stayed in micro schools as it suited them better. The demand for small-scale, personalized education prompted the founding of numerous independent micro schools after 2010. Their rapid growth, especially in areas with insufficient school spaces, has made them a significant part of the education landscape. Despite the smaller size when compared to conventional schools, the number of independent micro schools may even rival that of independent schools. This growth has been acknowledged by the Department of Basic Education for years. However, the DBE has labeled these institutions as illegal independent educational institutions in 2018, even cautioning homeschoolers against associating with them. In Gauteng alone, nearly 70 independent micro schools have been shut down, possibly due to issues of legality or concerns about their quality. The closure of some of these schools may have been necessary, but the broader issue lies in the lack of a suitable regulatory framework, leaving parents desperate for alternative education options without proper guidance or support. The state is criticized for failing to provide the necessary regulatory structure, ultimately impacting the best interests of both parents and learners. Nearly 80% of independent micro schools would like to be able to register. However, the provincial registration requirements for independent schools have been designed with large conventional schools in mind. Registration is simply unaffordable. Some schools, a little handful, have been able to register as independent schools, but the high cost of registration, including Umalusi fees, makes registration unattainable for the vast majority. The cost of registration for a micro school could amount to as much as 170,000 rand, as in the registration cost for a conventional low-fee independent school. And this is beyond the affordability for these schools and micro schools that cannot meet the financial burden of registration in the way that conventional schools can. The cost of these registrations cannot realistically be absorbed by the small number of learners in such an institution. And while we do see that a number of micro schools' fees are more expensive than traditional public mainstream schools, most of these parents are also seeking additional therapies and support for their children and cannot fork out higher school fees in order to aid in the registration process. The situation is analogous to that of the registration of independent early childhood development centers. The DBE has recognized this and in the case of ECDs is assisting with registration drives. Responsible actors in the sector are actively seeking registration and have appeared before the PCBE during the oral submissions in Parliament to request an appropriate regulatory framework. The need to address the issue of independent microschools has been recognized in the final report of the PCBE on the Belable and was mentioned in recent provincial hearings in Mpumalanga. Independent microschools are not just small schools. Many independent microschools use alternative curricula, educational approaches, and assessment processes and procedures that are simply not catered for in the current registration procedures. The lack of a legal framework exposes the learners, parents, owners, and both the DBE and the PEDS to a number of legal risks. The DBE has been aware of the existence of independent microschools for decades and specifically mentioned them in the 2018 Policy on Home Education, and has therefore had at least 5 years to close this gap. Recent coverage in the press has highlighted the existence of fly-by-night operators seeking to take financial advantage of parents and learners, and this is a consequence of the lack of a proper legal framework. This places learners, parents, owners, and even the national and provincial education departments in position of legal risk. In respect to the latter, for the failure to facilitate the right to basic education by creating appropriate legal frameworks. In light of what I've just mentioned, Education First is deeply concerned that Clause 33 of the Belable, amending Section 46 of the South African Schools Act, proposes increasing the penalty for establishing and operating an unregistered independent school from 3 to 12 months. Despite the DBE being aware of the existence of IMS for decades and requesting submissions on both the Belable and the Policy of Home Education for amendments of the law, the DBE has not engaged with independent microschools prior to the tabling of the Belable in Parliament. The DBE has not taken any research into microschools, and this lack of research means that the socioeconomic impact assessment is inadequate. Inadequate independent microschools are not mentioned in the SIA, and no comment is made on the increase on the penalty, no criminological research is presented on the advisability of this increase and the impact intended or unintended on both the parents, children, and organizations that facilitate this. So what does Education First propose? We make the following proposals: that specific provisions be added to the Belable that instruct the MECs to issue instructions for the registration of independent microschools, that the right to use alternative curricula, educational approaches, and assessment processes and procedures is protected, that the best interests of learners are protected by including key principles of the Children's Act in Chapter 5 of the South African Schools Act, that the increase in the penalty to 12 months be removed from the bill, and that unregistered independent institutions are included in dispute resolution processes. These proposals are reflected in the clause-by-clause section of our written independent microschool submission that was presented earlier this year. In addition, we request that the Select Committee take the following under consideration: that microschools receive a full rebate on Umalusi fees, that duplications between the provisional registration process of the PEDS and Umalusi should be eliminated, that micro schools are invited to present to the select committee wide of the education bill or the Bella bill process, that special note be taken of the role that micro schools play in providing education to learners with special needs and those who struggle in the CAPS environment, that research be conducted into how independent micro schools can assist on a national level in addressing the special needs crisis, and that micro schools are included in the representative structures established by the Minister of Basic Education at a national level and the MECs in their respective provinces. Education First Research Group has made suggestions on clause-by-clause amendments, but the ones that I would like to highlight are the detailed proposed amendments included in the IMS submission, with an emphasis on definitions to include independent micro schools, alternative curricula and modalities, that there will be a protection of autonomy with regards to assessment and curricula used by independent micro schools, that the admission age criteria be considered in necessary instances, efforts in registration, the penalty of clause 33, that subsidies be provided to independent micro schools, and that when school closures are instituted, that the best interests of learners are taken into consideration. In conclusion, independent micro schools play a vital role in our education, and their challenges demand urgent attention. Education First proposal provide a constructive pathway for regulatory reform, securing a balanced and equitable education system. We urge the Select Committee to adopt these proposals promptly. Thank you for your time and attention today. I'm confident that our collaborative efforts can pave the way for positive legislative reform, ensuring the sustainable operation and protection of the interests of learners and educators in independent micro schools. We look forward to continuing conversations as active stakeholders. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, that's the presentation from independent micro schools education first research group. Thank you very much. Are you done?
Yes, thank you so much, Chair.
Okay, thanks Emilio. Honourable members, are there points of questions? Clarity seeking questions to the presenter. Monitoring it from here. No, there are no clarity seeking questions for now. Thank you very much for your presentation. The committee will hold a meeting after this, and then we will engage, and those meetings will be always in the public domain, so those who have made their presentations can actually follow this on coming meetings on YouTube and parliamentary channels. Thank you very much. Well, members, there being no questions, I'll call upon the next presenter, who will be section 27. They are represented by Mayor D. Michelle Petherbridge, if I'm pronouncing your surname well.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair.
Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honourable members of the committee and fellow speakers. My name is D. Michelle Petherbridge. I'm presenting on behalf of section 27. This morning, and I'm going to just quickly share my screen. There we go. All right, so just to describe a little bit about who we are, Section 27 is a public interest law organization based in Brampton, St. Johannesburg, and we use the law in a variety of ways to further the right to basic education and the right to access to healthcare in particular across South Africa, and we do this through a number of ways, such as research, advocacy, and litigation. In terms of our submissions, we're going to address 13 issues. I note that the committee has our PowerPoint presentation already, so I'm going to jump right into them. In terms of compulsory schooling, Section 27 welcomes the introduction of compulsory grade R. However, we know that learners who are enrolled in this compulsory grade R need to be provided with quality education, and what this will require is appropriate and equitable resourcing, learning support, and qualified teachers who can implement play-based learning programs. So in order to facilitate this, the kind of recommendations we're making into Bella is that Bella amends Section 5A, subsection 2C of the South African Schools Act, and that is the section that concerns the minister's power to publish norms and standards, particularly on learning and teaching support material. And what we want is to see the inclusion of a reference to the availability of age-appropriate play material and equipment. In addition to this, we also welcome the DBE's recognition that basic education extends to grade 12 and is no longer limited to just grade 9 or learners at, who are the age of 15 years. And this is in line with recent Constitutional Court judgments, a judgment, and in particular the Moko versus Acting Principal of Malusi Secondary School and others case. In respect of corporal punishment, we welcome the inclusion of a definition of corporal punishment and particularly the confirmation again that it's abolished in schools. But we believe that the abolishment of corporal punishment should not just be limited to those physical forms of corporal punishment. They need to also be extended to non-physical forms of corporal punishment. And so we are recommending an inclusion in Clause 10 to be revised to include the abolishment of any form of punishment that is cruel and degrading. And that this be clarified in Clause 1 in particular, which should now be amended to include punishment which belittles, humiliates, denigrates, scapegoats, threatens, scares, or ridicules the child. And through these amendments, we believe that those non-physical forms of corporal punishment, which would include things like name-calling and threatening of learners, will now be included in the Bella Bill as well. In terms of learner dropouts, we believe that it's not effective to make individual schools, and particularly principals, educators, and school governing bodies, solely responsible for tracking and tracing learners who are absent from school and to provide interventions for them. We feel this needs to be a collective effort with all stakeholders, and what we are recommending to facilitate this is that Clause 3 of Bella be revised to include a provision that will oblige government to form intergovernmental committees at both a provincial and a national level. And our suggestion or proposal is that these committees consist of representatives from the DBE, the Department of Social Development, the officials from StatSA and National Treasury. In terms of the admission of undocumented learners, what we have noted in the Bella Bill is that most of the documentation that is required to be provided in terms of Clause 1 when admitting a child into school is not in line with what the courts have said. We know that Clause 4, subsection B of Bella says that even without this documentation, a learner will still be able to attend school. But we note that Bella still obliges a principal to tell parents or guardians to obtain these documents. And this goes against a decision that was made in 2019, and in particular the Centre for Child Law versus Minister of Basic Education, that said that all learners need to provide is their birth certificates. And where this is not available, any other proof of identity, like an affidavit that needs to be admitted to school. So what we are recommending is that Clause 4 of Bella be altered to only provide that learners need to provide a birth certificate. And where this is not available, any alternative form of identification is allowed. And that would be an affidavit, a sworn statement by a parent, a caregiver or a guardian, or a document wherein the learner is fully identified. In terms of policy-making functions of school governing bodies, what we have seen through our advice desk is that there are STB policies that have excluded learners, and we know these have the potential to continue such an exclusion and perpetuate historical discrimination. And that is why we welcome the fact that school policies can now be reviewed by the head of department and that the Bella Bill makes a possibility for this in terms of clauses 4 and 5 of Bella. What we are worried about is that there's now been an omission of certain steps in terms of due process. And in particular, we note that there's a deletion of the head of department's obligation to actually provide reasons and substantiate why it does not approve a policy. And we see this was something that was present in the previous Bella Bill. Why this is so important for us is that written reasons ensure that there's a higher level of transparency. In the event that a head of department's decision is appealed and sent to the MEC without reasons, this decision is not properly substantiated. Without reasons, that decision-making is also inconsistent with principles of administrative justice. What we've also noted is that in the event a head of department doesn't approve a school governing body's language or admission policy, and an SGB doesn't take steps to appeal that, there is no process defined for what needs to happen next. The previous billable did include steps such as the HOD returning it to an SGB with recommendations or amendments that needed to be made, and this has now been excluded. So what we are recommending is that there be clarity now in terms of a process that must be followed. If a head of department does not approve a school's admission policy or language policy, and if they are not satisfied, they also need to be obliged to provide reasons for this decision. In addition to this, we need to make sure that the head of department actually has the capacity to review all these policies effectively and within the timeframes that Bella is now proposing. And what we are recommending is that an office be established that will actually specialize in reviewing these policies and to undertake the initial review of FGB's language and admission policies within the 30 days of commencement of Bella. We also recommend that an individual complaints mechanism be established for persons who want to challenge individual school policies outside of this HOD process and outside of the review period specified in Bella. We note that all schools of conduct need to have exemption clauses. And in terms of this, we believe that Clause 7 of Bella needs to guide school governing bodies a bit more in what exactly the meaning of just cause is when granting or refusing an application for an exemption. What we are recommending is that there be suggested factors included in Bella that could include the best interests of the child or the ability of the school to reasonably accommodate a learner. This will make sure that SGBs are considering relevant factors when making this decision and are aware that they have a duty to reasonably accommodate learners. In addition to this, what we have seen through our advice desk is that there are still ongoing exclusions of learners who are pregnant. And what we would like to see in the billable is a clear and express provision stating that any direct or indirect discrimination against learners who are pregnant is completely prohibited. In terms of school governance checks and balances, we recognize that there are times when a head of department would want to dissolve a school governing body, and we see this presented in Clause 21 of Bella. However, we recommend that there be greater clarity on the grounds upon which an HOD may rely when they take the steps to do this. We also note that SGBs are not often trained in how they're supposed to perform their functions, and we note that there need to be greater and effective programs run by the state to capacitate our SGBs, to give them information on their roles and how to address power imbalances between staff and SGBs. In respect of school closures and mergers, we submit that Clause 13 of Bella needs to be revised, so that there's an obligation placed on the MEC when deciding to merge one school with another to take certain things into consideration. And we've inserted this because we see this constantly coming in through our advice desk, that there are issues that are often not resolved before a merger takes place. And so what we want to see is an obligation on the MEC to make sure that there is adequate school infrastructure provided to accommodate all learners in their new school, that there is adequate and sufficient transportation to make sure all learners can get to school, and that any challenges involving school uniforms be addressed before a merger commences. We also note that this version of the billable has taken out a step like we saw previously in due process. And what we want to see is that when an MEC makes a decision to merge a school, that they provide reasons why that decision has been made. As I mentioned, it wasn't the previous billable, it's now been taken out. And as I mentioned before, this will really ensure transparency and greater accountability, and we'd like to see this included again. In terms of dispute resolution, Clause 37 of Bella seeks to introduce those steps that must be taken when trying to resolve a dispute between heads of departments or MECs and school governing bodies. But we see that this clause doesn't really guide these parties very much on how to resolve these disputes, and in particular, there's no criteria on how these parties can go about this. And we see that there's a failure to refer to any kind of meaningful engagement as a way to resolve these disputes. What we recommend and think will facilitate this is that normative criteria be included in Bella to guide the resolution of disputes that will promote meaningful engagement, And this criteria can include, for example, fairness, transparency, flexibility, practicality, as well as the best interests of the child principle. In relation to the centralized procurement of LTSM, we see that Clause 14 of BELA allows for this on a provincial level. But we also note, and this was particularly highlighted in a recent case, Cooler Development Project versus Head of Department, Eastern Cape Department of Education, that the centralization of this procurement does not necessarily solve all the problems related to this. What we recommend is that the department urgently finalize norms and standards on the procurement of LTSM in terms of its powers in Section 5A, Subsection 1, Subsection C of SASA. But we also recommend that Clause 14 of BELA be amended to make sure that any kind of procurement of LTSM that takes place is also in line with the principles of good governance set out in Section 195 of the Constitution. In relation to the criminalization of parents who fail to cause their children to attend school, Section 27 notes that this is ineffective, it's against the best interests of the child, and it has the potential to disproportionately prejudice mothers in particular. We recommend that these kind of criminal sanctions on parents be completely removed from available. However, in the event that they are kept, we note that these have to be made subject to certain considerations to make sure that the best interests of the child are protected. In relation to the penalization of persons and protests that obstruct or disrupt schooling, we know that there is a need to prevent protest action that is disruptive, that will infringe upon persons' rights to basic education, and that they should be penalized for this. But we submit that the creation of a new penalty for this in Clause 2 of BELA is too broad, and it runs the risk of violating a range of constitutional rights. We know that there is a host of existing law that penalizes persons participating in protests already, and we feel that there should just be greater enforcement of these laws and that this amendment be removed entirely. In relation to random searches of learners, we feel that schools need to be guided further than what is set out in Section 8A of SASA on how to undertake these random searches. We submit that the minister should be granted the power to make regulations on searches and that she should take steps to publish this as soon as possible. But we also recommend that rules relating to searches of learners should be provided in every school's code of conduct. In relation to alcohol on school premises, Section 27 is of the opinion that the most effective way to protect our learners is to make sure that there is a complete blanket ban on the presence of alcohol on school grounds during school and during school activities, except for those instances where it's for educational purposes. What we're therefore recommending is that Clause 8 of BELA be revised to insert alcohol into the list of banned substances that are prohibited on school premises, of course, again, noting the disclaimer that unless this is for the use for educational use. And then lastly, we note that Clause 40 of BELA proposes to make changes to the preamble of SASA. However, we recommend that that Clause 40 be rephrased to encompass the full extent of obligations that is imposed on the state by the Constitution. And in terms of this, we're recommending that Clause 40 be amended to state that South Africa's new national system for schools will facilitate the education of children through respecting, protecting, promoting, and fulfilling the right to basic education. And this will be in line with those duties that are imposed in terms of Section 7(2) of the Constitution. So that is our full presentation. I thank you very much, Chair and the committee, for the opportunity to make this. And of course, there are our details in the event of any questions. Thank you very much, Chair.
My apologies, I think we've lost Chair.
Can I kindly request one of the honorable members to take over in the meantime?
Hi, Nolitando. Who is next? Is there another presenter that's on next?
Next online is Learning CAT Remedial Teaching, and the presenter is Ms. Catherine Kenyon.
Thank you. Can Ms. Kenyon please continue with the presentation?
Hi, thank you very much. Thank you to the chair in his absence, to the other members of the committee. May I please share my screen?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I am an owner of a micro school, and I'm also actually part of one of the people who does participate in the Education First research group that was mentioned earlier. So my name is Kath Kenyon. I run a very, very tiny school. I literally only have space for 4 physical attending learners. And then I actually have other learners who are doing remote learning from around the country. And my micro school actually sprang up organically because my very first student was paid for by the state. He was on roll at a state-funded special school, and it was deemed that he was too volatile and too dangerous to have on the premises. And they paid me to teach him off-site in a different space. And since then, I've actually been given students by the department that via them or other experts have been deemed ineducable. So what I do is I run an alternative curriculum. It's not currently listed as an approved curriculum in South Africa because any attempts I've made to do so have been met with blank stares and the answer of, we'll get back to you. It's a recognized curriculum in the UK run by an NPO called ASDAN. They have options for children with disabilities ranging from very, very low functioning, literally as long as I can communicate in some way, all the way through to the equivalent of GCSE and A-level courses in the UK, which operated about NQF levels 3 and 4 in South Africa. And as I've said, I cannot seem to get these lined up in South Africa at all. I just keep getting given blank stares. They offer courses in things like there's an international awards program, which runs at bronze, silver, and gold, which equates to GCSEs. There's key steps for slightly younger children between 12 and 14. Most of their courses are actually geared for kids between 11 and 25, although there isn't technically an upper age limit. The Towards Independence and the New Horizons courses you can see here are for very low functioning children, and they focus on teaching independent living and as far as possible, employability skills. The short courses are, again, equivalent to a GCSE on the UK system. And as you can see from my list, they are very comprehensive. There are many that are not on my list that I do offer. There's a manufacturing one. There's a hair and beauty one. They are very basic introductions. But if they can be recognized by CETAs here, these students could actually use them to find work. I have had students who've gone on from doing animal care and the environment and land-based. They've gone on to find work, which they would normally be denied because the normal traditional South African exit routes are denied to them because they can't pass grade 9 using a conventional method. So as I said, my success story is my students are finding jobs. My school has grown from 4 in-person students to 30 remote and hybrid students. I have students as far away as the UK and Germany. In the last 3 years alone, I've issued over 100 certificates because students can work at their own pace, and it's all about mastery. As I said, students who've been branded as ineducable are actually achieving things. I've got students working at their own pace. All certificates are recognized in the UK, and so far I've had 100% success rate. The things that my program offers is the ability to work at their own pace and individualize the curriculum. They are being taught employability skills. They're being taught independent living skills, and they're being taught in a way that gives them dignity. Some of the reasons that parents have come to find alternative education such as mine: lack of space. We've heard this before. There are thousands of grade 1s and grade 8s that just have not been placed yet. And in the disability sector, it's even greater. The waiting lists at state special schools are miles long. There are children who've on those waiting lists for years before they get offered places. Then there are children who are being bullied at school, or they are just not struggling with anxiety. They cannot function in a traditional school system that is as big as our schools are. They just can't cope. There are lack of accommodations. Too often children's special needs are actually being pushed out of the system. The number of students who've come to me and their parents are telling me how they have been told by Department of Education representatives, don't waste your money finding a school your child is ineducable. Or they are being put in schools that don't know what they're doing with those disabilities. They're not trained. I have students coming to me from a school with children with physical disabilities. And those children are being told, well, the parents have been told, take your child out because for that child to use their specialist equipment means that they're losing out on teaching time and that we can't accommodate them. This is a school designed for children like that, saying that that child cannot be met there, their needs cannot be met there. And then with things like the fact that so many of our grade 4 learners can't read for meaning, so many of our grade 6 teachers can't do grade 6 maths, there is just a general loss of faith in the state system. These are four of the key reasons why parents are seeking alternative education and why we actually need to be recognized and accepted. So there are several versions of modes of alternative education. There's homeschooling, which you've heard about before. That's education in the child's own home. There's online schooling, which definitely sprang up big time after COVID. So obviously learning through a digital platform, and that can be at home or at a tutor center or at a cottage school or micro school. So independent micro schools are also called cottage schools. They're very small, often less than 70 students, definitely less than 135. As I said, in my case, depending on how you count, anything from 4 to 30. Tutor centers, which are often running after-school programs and short-term tutor spots where a child might come in only for an hour or two. And then there's a hybrid of all of the above. My center is definitely a hybrid. I currently have two students who actually come in one day a week. Everybody else works online. And where this is really useful for children with disabilities, children on the autistic spectrum now have safe spaces where there is far less stimulation, there's far less sensory overload, their needs can be accommodated. Low functioning and low IQ students can actually now find a curriculum that works for them in a space that works for them. I've heard stories from a representative, the Deputy Chief Director of the Human Rights Commission for the Western Cape, shared a horrific story of a special school in Mossel Bay, where all it was providing was a concrete floor for the resident or the students to sit on all day. No stimulus, no interaction, nothing. This is where independent micro schools can help fill those gaps. Working with children with dyslexia, they can be given support more easily in a smaller environment. And I've mentioned physically disabled children, medical issues. If you've got something like cerebral palsy, chances are there's comorbidities that go with that. If you've got a child with leukemia, they're going to need regular medical appointments. Micro schools can actually facilitate all of those appointments because we're not constrained by having to keep up with bigger classes, bigger groups, and a strict curriculum. Last week, I attended a focus group on this with the Department for Women, Young People, and Persons with Disabilities. And the biggest take back from that was the support I received for the concept of independent micro schools and alternative education in providing the constitutional right of a good quality education to children with disabilities. And you can see, I actually heard directly from Dr. Pravina Sukra Eli about this, and she is very, very pro allowing micro schools and other alternative education modes to help with disabilities and ensuring their constitutional rights. So basically, independent micro schools are filling a very important gap. We are picking up children who have not been placed in schools, either permanently or temporarily. We are providing children where current provision doesn't meet their needs. We are allowing for hybrid and remote learning, which are 21st century approaches to schooling. We need to change our mindset to get out of the Victorian mode of schooling that is so often what our classrooms currently look like. We need to be able to give small spaces to the rural schools where schools are being closed because they don't meet the 135 student limit. Micro schools can spring up in those areas and can help. We have a really important role. Part of now, I know the government has brought in the DCAPS curriculum for disabilities, but it's still very much based on CAPS. It's still assessment driven. It's not flexible. It's very prescriptive. And a lot of the content is actually not empowering the learners or teaching them any employability skills. And certainly when I've had a student who's been taken on to a state-funded special school that they run DCAPS, and the proviso that they took that student was that he continued on roll with me and continued my courses outside of hours to prevent him regressing because that's what DCAPS would result in. Need I say more? Now, the problem is Clause 33 makes my school illegal. The constitutional national law says I must register, and clause 33 says I can go to jail for a year if I don't. According to OCTLA, I'm a fraud teaching fraudulently. But I cannot register because the Western Cape law says that I need to know that special needs schools under 10 cannot register. They cannot confirm if this applies to students over 15, online students, remote learning students, or part-time students. The vast majority of my students fall under one or more of those points. I am an illegal, unregistered, and exposed because of all of this. My billable journey, I have been part of trying to get responses from the department and the government since 2017, which is more than 5 years ago. I submitted my original proposal in the first round of submissions. I've had no response. In 2022, I again submitted my reviews, and I was then invited to present the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. And again, I received positive responses from the members of that committee. And I was heard and promised responses that I'm, from the DBE that I'm still waiting for. There's been no consultation with IMS on how on our roles and how we can play our role in helping the Department of Education provide education to children with particular disabilities. We are only ever met with threats of penalties. We are never engaged in anything, and no research has been done into what we're doing. It does not, so the available does not currently include independent micro schools, online schools, hybrid schools, tutor centers, or learning cooperatives, which is often made up of homeschool families working together to pool the adults in the scenario's best skills. Many IMSs cannot register because of the inflexible criteria. I've already demonstrated why I'm having a problem. We are therefore excluded from funding applications, which then makes us elitist. I would love to be able to run my program with children from poorer communities, but I have to pay pounds to register my curriculum. And if I cannot get funding from the private or state sector, I cannot reach the children I would love to reach the most. And it also results in the fear of being let down, being shut down, which means that there are many micro schools that fly completely under the radar. Some of those are absolutely fantastic. Some of those are diabolical because the lack of legislation allows them to fly under the radar. We need to have suitable legislation that includes us so that we can actually be legitimate, we can be held accountable, and we can fill in the gaps that traditional education frameworks don't do. So what we want specific provisions about to instruct the NECs to issue instructions for the registration of independent micro schools. We want the right to use alternative curriculum options, particularly with children with disabilities or special needs, because this meets their needs and allows for them to reach their goal of actually receiving a decent education. We'd like the best interests of the learners being protected by including the key principles of the Children's Act in Chapter 5 of the South African Schools Act. We'd like unregistered independent institutions included in dispute resolution processes because many of us would like to be registered but currently can't. The increase in penalty to 12 months needs to be removed from the bill so that those of us who are filling the gaps and are providing quality service can continue to do so without the fear of being penalized for doing so. The IMS proposal offers specific clause-by-clause formulations, which my colleague Jordan Willett actually did speak about, and the proposal was attached to my initial submission as well. And we also request that micro schools receive a full rebate on Umalusi fees. Again, this is what Jordan touched on earlier. That we are presented to invited to present to the select committee via this process. That the special role that we provide is being taken into account, particularly with children who cannot access DCAP or cannot access CAPS or similar state curriculums because of their special needs. That duplication between the provisional registration process of the provincial education departments and the Umalusi can be eliminated, thus helping us reduce costs. And also that micro schools are included in the representational structure established by the Minister of Basic Education at national level and the MECs in their respective provinces. I'd also like to ask a personal favor. Could somebody please ask the Chair of Umalusi to contact me when they present their budget so I can get my students' courses aligned and recognized? These are very valid courses that are internationally recognized. The organization runs courses all over the globe, as you have seen. And it would be nice to know that people in South Africa can be using those certificates legitimately. Finally, I invite the Select Committee to visit my independent micro school, where you can actually see how children with complex disabilities who have been branded ineducable by everybody else thrive and do incredibly well. Thank you, Chair, Committee, and everybody else. And I hope that, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for this moving presentation. Honourable members, that's the presentation from Learning Katramedian Teaching.